Let's start with immigration, a big issue here in South Florida. And I wanted to talk about something your father said actually very recently on Fox News. When talking about immigration, he said that, quote, the first thing we're going to do if and when I win is we're going to get rid of all the bad ones. He did go on to say, what people don't know is that Obama got tremendous numbers of people out of the country. Bush, the same thing. I'm going to do the same thing. Help us understand, what was he trying to say there?
Yeah, well, it's very simple. I mean, my father's message is America, America first, right? And, you know, right now in this country, we have 100 million people out of the workforce. Median income hasn't risen in this country in 15 years. And there's been real problems with certain sanctuary cities. And, you know, I know I've personally, Louis, gone around the country, and I've met so many people. But, you know, I've met the families of, you know, people, you know, killed by illegal immigrants, whether it be Jamil Shah or whether it be, I mean, there's so many of them. Kate Steinle is a great, you know, example. And so I think what my father's saying there is he's saying, you know, there are, you know, repeat offenders, and there's bad people, and there's people who have violated the law, and they're illegal immigrants. And, you know, those people should not be allowed to, you know, continue to exist in the United States. You know, they just shouldn't be here. And, again, he wants to keep this country safe. He wants to keep this country prosperous. He wants all Americans to have jobs and to have a great economy and to have median income rise, not fall over a person's lifetime. You know, those are things that you're seeing as a result of tremendous illegal immigration. So, you know, my father's a guy who believes in immigration. My mom's an immigrant into this country. You know, his current wife is an immigrant into this country. But his message is just simple. Just come in legally. Follow the law. You know who's coming into our nation so we can ensure security. But it has to be done legally, not illegally.
Obviously, one group of people that you'll see a lot of here in South Florida, Dreamers. And you're talking about these the young folks, people under 18 who came in undocumented. The president tried to pass Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA. But, of course, Congress has fought and the courts have pushed back. How would President Trump treat Dreamers?
Listen, I think I think Dreamers are what made a nation. But again, there has to be a legal process in order, you know, to do that, in order to come in. And so, you know, my father should be spending a lot of time talking about, you know, exactly this, because it's difficult. I mean, it is truly a difficult subject. There's nothing fun about this subject. I mean, it's people's lives, and many great people, many really great people. So, you know, listen, a policy will have to be formed. I mean, a policy will have to be formed, and, you know, he's working on that, and he's speaking to a lot of people. And, you know, just this week he met with a tremendous amount of, you know, Hispanic leaders and, you know, Latinos, and, you know, he's hearing a lot of great feedback. And, you know, he's going to be giving major speeches on exactly this, you know, topic, because, listen, make no mistake about it, it's a topic that affects a lot of people around, you know, around this country. And at the same time, there are some amazing people, and you know, we'll have to figure that out. And you know, it's going to be something that he's going to spend a lot of time talking about.
I want to talk about Zika real quickly. You know, that's a big story here in South Florida. Does your father support the $1.9 billion Zika funding request made by the White House in February?
Yeah, well, listen, Zika, you know, I haven't spoken to my father about Zika specifically, but I know it affects my life, right? I mean, If you look at my wife and I got married 2 years ago, and, you know, we're entering that kind of critical stage of our life where we're starting to think about having kids and, you know, starting to talk about that. And it's very, very scary what's happening. And, you know, I think initially people probably underestimated how bad Zika was going to be, right? I mean, they relegated it to Brazil, and they relegated it to so much of, you know, Central and South America, and maybe even the Caribbean. And now you're seeing the cases come into South Florida. You're seeing the cases come into other places. You know, Zika's come into New York State in a big way. I mean, this is something that's here to stay. So, I mean, we better find out a problem, or we better find out a solution to the problem. In fact, I think there just yesterday, from what I read, there was the first case of a child born with the Zika virus, you know, here in the U.S., and it's horrible. You look at these pictures of these beautiful children that are born with deformities because of something that's truly horrendous, and we have to do something about the pandemic. We have to do something about this, and you know, we have to stop it because it's really negatively affecting people's lives. So, you know, we have properties in Florida, and I know this is something that you know, a lot of our employees and a lot of our you know, great members and guests are concerned about, and we very much need to do something about the problem. It's a scary notion, especially if you're in those childbearing years.
Now, Governor Rick Scott's been really critical of Congress on trying to pass Zika funding. And if he can't even get his own party to move on this, I'm trying to figure out what a Trump presidency would do. How would your father respond to Congress on trying to get something done?
Yeah, listen, I've just never spoken about, you know, Zika specifically, you know, with my father, albeit I know it's something that obviously he's very, very keyed in on. But I know he would do something because it's just a real epidemic, and it's a real pandemic. It's a real problem for these communities. And, you know, we're the United States, and when something like this happens, we have to take care of it. No different than, you know, when you have a natural disaster down in Louisiana, you know, the government has to step in and it has to help solve the problem. And, you know, we are the head of the free world. We are a great Western society, and we can't allow, you know, an awful disease like that to affect, you know, the childbearing, you know, years of many, you know, great families, or, you know, females who want to start great families. And we have to do something about it. And it's, again, it's a scary notion. It's just a very, very scary thing that's happening out there. So, again, I mean, he would figure out a solution to, you know, a problem. And this is clearly becoming a very, very big problem.
Let me ask you about Cuba briefly. What does your father feel about the current relationship the U.S. has tried to create with Cuba?
Yeah, listen, I think he's sitting back and watching. You know, it's interesting. I see it personally from, you know, a business standpoint, right? I mean, you're seeing an opening of Cuba unlike anything that's, you know, that we've ever seen before. You're seeing major international companies go into Cuba. Starwood, for instance, Starwood Hotels, you know, they just went into Cuba in a very big way. You know, I mean, obviously it was unprecedented to see the president go down there, you know, for the first time. And you know, it's difficult. I mean, I have a lot of friends whose families were very, very affected by obviously what happened in Cuba. They lost land, they lost property. You know, they lost a lot of other things. You know, I also understand that, you know, sometimes time heals, and you know, changes are obviously made, and you know, it's been progressive, and a lot more people are going back there, and it doesn't seem like there's a day where you can't open the paper where you don't see some celebrity, you know, now walking the streets of Havana. So it's really interesting. I mean, it's obviously been a dark history that we've had as a country with Cuba. At the same time, there's a tremendous amount of amazing Cuban people in this country, so many of which I know very well.
But you just said that your father's watching it, and I'm wondering if he gets into the White House, does he want to continue that relationship, or does he want to reverse anything that President Obama's done?
Yeah, Lewis, I'm not a politician, and I'm not a guy who speaks really on foreign policy. That's not, you know, I build hotels for a living. I'm a civilian. This, you know, process, what I do is I speak about my father and the great man that you know, that he is. I'm just saying that, you know, I personally find it very interesting because I see that struggle. I spend a tremendous amount of time in South Florida, you know, in Doral and other places, and I see that struggle between, you know, people who came over here and they had to come over to the United States to, you know, escape what was happening in Cuba, and really amazing people. And obviously, you know, what's been happening over the last, you know, 6 months with the president landing in Havana. And I just, again, I'm not a politician. I don't really speak to international relations with, you know, I'm quite frankly not qualified to. It's not what I do, you know, for a living. I find it to be very interesting.
Let me ask you this then.
That's existing.
How about this, as a businessman and being in the hotel business,
sure.
Cuba could be a very attractive possibility. But at the same time, you're talking about dealing with a regime that we've had issues with for decades. So as a businessman, how would you view Cuba?
Well, we've personally chosen to stay out of Cuba. You know, I mean, we've had a lot of, you know, opportunities come to us. We've been approached by many people. And as I mentioned before, you have, you know, major hotel companies like Starwood and so many of their, you know, their parent company, Marriott, and so many other people that are, you know, going into Cuba, that have signed deals in Cuba, that are going in there. I mean, we haven't been able to get comfortable with that yet. And, you know, we aren't willing to do that, you know, at the time. I mean, I think more time needs to go by, and I think we need to see what's going to ultimately happen. But you're right. I mean, it is a regime, and it's, you know, very tough. I mean, it's very tough. It's a different rule of law. It's a different, you know, way of life. It's certainly different than kind of the Western principles that we all, see every single day. But at the same time, it is 80 miles off, the coast of Miami, and you see the Bahamas, and you see so many, so much of the success of the Caribbean. And there's no question that the nostalgia of Cuba is there for so many Americans, which is why you see, again, as I mentioned before, celebrities walking down the street, every single day. There's something there that people are obviously drawn to. So it's not right for us right now. As a guy who built hotels, it's not right for us right now. Will it in the future, when if it opens up and it has real rule of law and stable government and Western principles? Yeah, very well. It could be, but I think that time is yet to come.
This is a big topic down here in South Florida. Over the last 90 years, scientific data has shown that the sea level of Miami Beach has gone up, and we've seen a lot of flooding issues. That's huge, considering that's how big part of our economy down here. It's the tourism, it's the beaches. How would a President Trump address this risk, this sea level issue in South Florida?
Sure, and we have a lot of oceanfront properties. I think you probably know better than anybody. We have a lot of buildings down in Miami, and we have a lot of buildings. We have a lot of property, all over South Florida. And I think my father's very pragmatic. I think he obviously understands environment, and he's gotten, quite frankly, as a company, we've gotten tremendous environmental awards. So many of the things that we've done with our golf courses and the environmental awards that we've gotten there, and just so many other things. I mean, so many of our buildings employ so many of the green principles because it's just, very, very important. It's common sense, but it's also important. At the same time, I think, my father's against so many of the regulations that are put in place that are so burdenous on business that you can no longer conduct, business in this country. And then what happens is that drives businesses to China and to Mexico and to so many other countries around the world, and we lose all our manufacturing in this country. So I think there's a delicate balance between the two. I think you see an EPA that's become very radicalized in this country, which almost makes it impossible for businesses to thrive and succeed. At the same time, I think there's a lot of really common sense things that we can put in place, because it's, quite frankly, the right thing to do. So,
well, let me ask you.
You have to get that balance. You have to get that balance right, because honestly, Louis, since 2000, and I think you know this as well as anybody, we've lost 1/3 of our manufacturing from the United States. 1/3, which is the reason we have 100 million people out of the workplace, which is a reason that the wages across the country have remained stagnant and haven't gone up. We have to manufacture things in this country, but at the same time, we have to be very, very, careful environmentally. So there is an inflection point in there, and there is a balance, and we have to be very, very focused on achieving the right balance.
And real quickly, because you talk about that balance, and I think about some of the things I've heard your father say about the issue of climate change, but how would that balance look? How do you create an environment where business can thrive, but at the same time, you have to protect that environment, because that's how you're making your money. If you don't protect it, you could lose it.
Sure. Well, I think it's called common sense regulation, right? I mean, I think it's regulation that's not so overburdened, right? It doesn't employ so many burdens that a company can't even open. We have a good friend, and my father has spoken about him several times, and he builds big manufacturing plants all over the world. And he said, listen, it's not even worth trying to build a manufacturing plant, no matter what the product is, whether they're making iPhones, whether they're making this, whether they're making that. It's not worth doing in the United States anymore because, honestly, just the process to try and get through the EPA takes 5, 6, 7 years. 3/4 of the time it's denied, and you spend millions and millions of dollars. And so what happens is, all the manufacturing plants just go, 1 foot over our border, and they build it there where they can get open very, very quickly. They can get permitted very, very quickly, and they can open up. And so we have to be smart about this. We have to allow businesses to open up in this country. Right now, more businesses in America are shutting than opening, which is a very, very scary proposition. So we have to reel back in a regulation. At the same time, if you look at some of the environmental atrocities of other countries, they're staggering, and that has to be fixed as well. I mean, we can't put all these measures into place in the United States only to have serial abusers of the environment create such atrocities overseas that it neglects anything that we did in the United States. So I think we need to lead by example. I think we need to do prudent things, but at the same time, we shouldn't affect business by having rampant regulations that are so burdensome that businesses can't even open in this country. So that's really the delicate balance that we need to figure out. And quite frankly, we should put pressure on the rest of the world because you know they're contributing much more to the carbon footprint than you know countries like America that really have put in smart regulation in certain areas.
We don't always agree with our parents, and sometimes they say things that embarrass us. Now, your father, obviously a very outspoken man, and has said a lot of things that his opponents have attacked him for. I'm wondering, at any point when you hear your dad say something in a speech, do you ever stop and say, "Dad, why'd you say that?" Do you ever talk to him about that?
Yeah, listen, you certainly disagree with your parents sometimes, and you know we have healthy debates in the family, but you know, my father is an amazing man. I mean, he's truly my best friend in the world. He's a great person. He's been an amazing, amazing father. And I can tell you, not only is he brilliant and is he an incredible negotiator, he's doing this for the right reason. You know, he doesn't need to be running for the Commander-in-Chief of the United States. And I think, Lewis, as you've seen, I mean, this is an incredibly difficult process. You know, you're taking bullets every single day. The media is writing stories about you every single day. You're constantly on the road. I mean, it is the most arduous process you can possibly imagine. And my father has funded the vast majority of his campaign. He's put in so much of his own money. He's doing this because this country, America, has given him absolutely everything, and it's being run down the tubes by, quite frankly, crooked and corrupt and incompetent politicians. We have an educational system in this country right now that's 30th in the world. I mean, think about that, 30th in the world. We have veterans all over the place that are being treated so horribly. They're not getting the treatment they need. We have 22 vets that are committing suicide every single day. We have almost $20 trillion of national debt. We have infrastructure problems in this country unlike what we've ever seen before. I mean, I can't walk through an airport in this country without seeing an acoustical tile ceiling that's falling down. You have median incomes, as I mentioned before, that haven't gone up in 15 years, meaning people are making the same money as they were 15 years ago. That's not right. We have more businesses, as I mentioned before, that are closing in the United States than are opening. You know, we need to be the land of prosperity again. We need to ensure a better future for our children than we have right now. And our politicians simply aren't doing that. And that's why my father is running. He's running to restore the respect that America deserves. I mean, we just gave $150 billion to Iran, a country who, for all intents and purposes, hates our guts. And then a day later, an engine to one of our military ships and one of our Navy ships breaks down and they point guns at our soldiers. As Americans, we deserve better. We deserve more respect. And my father will really sort out those problems, and he'll bring back opportunity to this country, and he'll really do a great job for this nation.
But as a follow-up, but has he ever said anything that you've really disagreed with, that you just didn't like the way he said it?
Yeah, listen, I think if you agree with everything that you know your parents say, I can imagine you haven't agreed with everything your parents have said, and no one does, quite frankly. And you know, I think that forms healthy debates. At the same time, I'm proud of my father. He's done an amazing job. He'll be a great commander in chief. And it's taken. I really give him a lot of credit for going through this process because it's a very tough process. And it's tough to be on the stump every single day. Speaking in front of 15,000, 20,000 people, you know, 3-4 times a day in some cases, on the news every single night. You know, sometimes, you know, you get passionate. Sometimes you maybe, you know, waver over that gray line a little bit. And I think it was really nice the other night when he had enough hubris to come out and say, "Hey, you know, I've said some things that I probably regret, and looking back in the heat of a moment, and, I think we're all humans." And, he's an amazing guy, and he cares deeply about this country, and he's going to do a great job for this country.
Last thing I wanted to ask you is, look, your father is no stranger to the limelight. I mean, over the decades, we've seen him on television, books, social media, movies. So we've seen a lot of sides of your father. But you're talking to the voters now. And besides what was said at the convention, what exactly don't we know about your father?
Well, you know, I think some people see it, and then, you know, others obviously have blinders onto it. But he's an amazing guy. He's a brilliant man. I mean, everything he's ever touched has turned to gold. He's you know, built a real estate empire that's incredible. And how did he do it? You know, he did it really employing American principles, which is hard work and tenacity and, you know, going after, you know, the American dream and trying to achieve that. And, you know, I've never met a person who works as hard as my father. I mean, he just doesn't stop. And he'll certainly do that, you know, for America, you know, when we win this thing in November. You know, but he's also an incredibly kind man, and he's incredibly generous. And, you know, I mean, he's the type of guy who would give his shirt off his back for anybody who needed it. And he's an incredibly loyal person. And I think one of the things that's hurt him the most throughout this whole process is, and we said this, and I actually spoke about this, Lewis, in my, you know, convention speech, but the first thing he said when we, you know, when he decided to run for president, actually told us, hey, guys, you know, let's do this together, was he said, we're going to quickly learn who our true friends were. And, you know, he's had a lot of friends that haven't been loyal to him. And, you know, I think, you know, you've seen a lack of loyalty in a lot of cases. And that comes with the political process. And we knew that was going to happen. But he's an immensely loyal person. If he loves you, if he cares about you, you know, to our employees, everybody. I mean, he's just a person who is immensely loyal. But he's also a great all-American guy. I mean, there's no one who'd rather eat a cheeseburger. There's no one who knows more about sports than he does. I mean, he could give you any stat for any baseball player, for any football player, for any golfer. I mean, he's a sports maniac, and he's just a great all-American guy who wants to see this country thrive again. And he's my best friend in the world, and he's been an amazing father to me, Don, Ivanka, and the rest of us. And he's an awesome guy who will do a great job for this nation.
Anybody who gets into this process, you're in it to win it. Sure. And you're not getting this far without that attitude, I'm sure. But somebody has to lose. So hypothetical, let's say come November, he loses. What does Donald Trump do then?
Well, listen, I think he said it before. You know, he goes, you know, I'll have viewed it as you know, a big waste in that, you know, I wasn't able to achieve all the things I want to achieve. I wasn't able to, you know, get the national deficit back in line. I wasn't able to take care of education. I wasn't able to fix our VA and rebuild our military into the strongest military in the world, even far, far stronger than it is today. I mean, he wouldn't have been able to achieve, you know, rebuild the infrastructure of this country and get jobs back into this country and stop the other countries from ripping us off. I mean, I think he would be, you know, really disappointed. You know, he is an ultimate competitor. And by the way, I think you want your commander-in-chief to be the ultimate competitor, because that person has to represent the United States every single minute of the day, you know, for the 4 or 8 years that they're in there. And he wants to see America win. He wants, you know, and we're not winning at anything anymore. And he speaks about this every single day. And we need to start winning again. You want that competitor in the White House. You want that person who is going to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on behalf of all the great people of this nation. And that's what he'll do. And hey, you know, if we lose, what will we do? We have an amazing family. We'll go back to doing what we do so well, building hotels. You obviously saw firsthand what we did in Doral, where we took a bankrupt property and we turned into something that's incredibly special. We'll go back to all of our employees and the properties we love and what we love to do. But he would truly love to fix the problems of this nation, and he would do a great job fixing the problems of this nation.
Mr. Trump, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much.
Lewis, I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me on.